You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? It's, I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee you.
Got to have personal responsibility, political accountability, and corporate culpability.
Get up, 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 get up.
We must eliminate poverty. I don't care what color the person, a child.
Get up, get up.
Why does a pessimist see a glass half empty, but an optimist see a glass half full? Are we locked into regressive mentality by change unseen? If you try to fail and then succeed, which have you done? Do you ask enough questions or do you settle for what you know? The only questions that really matter are the ones you ask yourself. Welcome to Mental Dialogue. All I ask is that you think. Think.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Shanika Peterson, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of Intelligent Radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Shanika. Thank you, Queen, for being on with me. I was having a little trouble getting in on the show, but can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you just fine. Good morning, Montoya.
Good morning, Queen. Good. Glad to have you on this morning. Thank you. As one of my Queens of Intellect members coming in to save today, as I have this special guest on this morning, we're going to go ahead and introduce Brother Baba Oshie, if you will. King, thank you for being with us this morning. Again, you hear my co-host, Shanika Peterson, on with me this morning. Before we get into this morning's topic, Baba Oshie, if you will, thank you for being with us. Say hello to the intellectual outcasts. I call my listeners. Hello, say hello to Shanika. And if you will, give a little bit of your background as it relates to our topic before we let the cat out the bag on the topic. But thank you for being with us, King.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's an honor to be on your program. I am Baba Oshie. excuse me. I do a radio program. I'm sorry, excuse me. Myself on the internet. African perspectives on time for an awakening and black radio talk, and I do that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time, and I'm a longtime activist, longtime brother fighting for the cause for African people. I live in Atlanta now. I've been in Atlanta almost 9 years, 9 years in October, but I'm from Milwaukee. And I'm a retired City of Milwaukee firefighter. But it was because of the firefighter. In fact, that's what's happening right now. I'm in New Orleans for a firefighter training program, helping brothers and sisters with their promotional potential, teaching them how to take these tests and so forth, how to run fire departments, how to be a company officer, and those kind of things. So once again, give back. That's the most important thing. To whom much is given, much is required. And so in terms of this topic, I find it very interesting, and some truly may not agree with some of the things that I'm going to present, because everything that I do present, I present it from an African-centered perspective. This is not my opinion. My opinions are profane. So I try to give you the perspective of those who I've been blessed to read. Some even had the opportunity to meet and study from and sit at their feet. So this is the perspective I'm coming from.
No, I love it. We welcome that perspective. For longtime listeners, they know We are the best in the world at, I would say, hard conversations on race, sex, and culture, and we welcome those varying opinions. Our ultimate goal is to listen to one another, not necessarily to change anyone's mind, but our motto of all I ask is that you think is just, can we lay a seed that, you know, people can think about that could play a role in their own lives. We rarely understand that sometimes changes that we make all started from a conversation, if you will. And so that's what we try to do each and every week, if you will. But thank you so much, Baba Oshie, for being with us this morning. Our discussion question, to go ahead and let the cat out the bag for those who are maybe your first time listening. I go by the name Black Socrates, so we always take the Socratic method, if you will, and we ask our topics in the form of a question. And this morning's discussion question is, do we still have Black cultural values that serve us? Do we still have Black cultural values that serve us? So, Shanika, again, thank you for last minute jumping on this thing as one of my Queen of Intellect members, but you know how we start this thing. When I hit you this morning and say, hey, can you hold me down? And you saw the topic worded this particular way, can you recall the first initial thought that popped in your head?
The first initial thought that popped into my head was, good question. Good question. I'm leaning more so yes, but I'm on the fence with it, Montoya. So I'm really interested in hearing how this whole discussion manifests itself. And based on the introduction of Baba Oshie, I am truly, truly interested in hearing his perspective and his thoughts on this topic.
No, absolutely. And, you know, again, we like to dialogue. We like to go intricate. And so, again, this conversation, I hope I'm setting the stage here correctly, will be extremely nuanced. And as Baba Oshie said, from his perspective, hey, there may be some things that, you know, the listeners maybe it's first time hearing, maybe that we don't agree with. And that's the dialogue we'll have. We'll dialogue through those things, not simply just to go back and forth and prove who's right. Again, we don't waste time with that. We like to have nuanced conversation, and even when we disagree, the ultimate goal is, well, let me understand why we disagree, because that's where the learning takes place. So with that said, Baba Oshie, I'm going to turn that same question. This is how we start our show, if you will. It's just the initial thought. So I know you have a whole lot of thoughts in reference to the discussion question, and we're going to get into that. We're going to go to a break and get deeper into the discussion, and I'll play cuts that'll probably add a lot of context to this question as it relates to current times. But if you will, King, when I said, hey, you know, we've been trying to link up for a long time, you said, yep, I'm willing to come on your show. When I told you the question, do we still have Black cultural values that serve us? Can you recall, and I'm putting you on the spot, what was your initial thought when I first said that's the topic? You know, just the initial thought only, then we're going to go to a break and get deeper.
When you said that, Black cultural baggage that serves us, what I thought about initially was the fact that from a cultural standpoint, you know, our culture, African culture, has been basically, I ain't saying never would be destroyed, but has been suppressed deeply here in this country. And as a consequence, because we want to be like the European, like the Caucasian, the white man, Yoruba, whatever, we placate to them. And so our culture is like a subculture, you know, to the dominant culture of Europeans. It is not African. It is a subculture. And so, in fact, that subculture is also imitated by the Europeans, because in that subculture, you know, we cool. We black, you know. But a lot of times it is not conducive to family. It's not conducive to community. It's not conducive to us pulling resources and spending amongst ourselves. It's a culture of flamboyance, it's a culture of materialism, it's a culture of ostentatious and being out there, you know. And so there's a lot of things when you talk about culture, because the bottom line is that when the European came out of those dark age, that medieval age, when he was walking around his castle with animals and so forth, only being educated by the Moors who, when Islam spread across North Africa, and those Northern Africans who accepted Islam went up into the Iberian Peninsula of Portugal and Spain and dominated Western, so-called Western Europe for almost 700 years. and taught them how to get them animals out the castle and put them in a corral, who taught them science and medicine and so forth. After that period, 700 years, the European got together and said, hey, listen, we may war amongst ourselves because they do. They're the most warring people on the damn planet.
Yeah, let me do this, brother Bob. I'll see if you will. We got to go to a break, and so we'll get into the depths of that conversation. And and I will say, the focus for me, I will say, do we still have black cultural values that serve us? And so I will push the conversation for us to talk about it within ourselves and find out what is serving us versus quote unquote what they did. I'm just throwing that out there, but we'll come back and break and get into the details. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
Okay, that's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's
kind of
sweet, like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh yeah. Okay, you said what? Shipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
You study today, black culture is trash. Ain't nothing positive about black culture. We're not highlighting spelling bee winners. We don't talk about the newest black business that's doing good. When you go on social media, and you look at some of the most trending videos and trending topics, it ain't black empowerment. It ain't uplifting black people. When you look at our movies, we ain't got no black heroes. Black culture has black propaganda. Hitler used propaganda to get the Germans to turn on the Jews. We use propaganda for our culture. We propagate pimps, gangsters, killers, womanizers, robbers, deceit, being unfaithful. We got some propaganda, homie, that's brainwashing.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Shanika Peterson. This morning's discussion question, do we still have black cultural values that serve us? Our special guest is Baba Oshie from African Perspective Radio. As we hear a quick cut, people probably know that voice by now. This is Brother Charleston White. Just a quick short I got off of YouTube of him talking about his perspective on black culture today. I think that's a good place to start, just from the standpoint of how do we currently see the culture before we even delve back into what are we pulling historically. And I think that's a correct word, Bob Oshie, that you said before the break, in a sense, the subculture that we operate in as African-Americans. I think that's very fair. But just the assessment of where we're at today, we just hear a quick thought, without cut, I should say, from Charleston White. Shanika, the queen of the show, I'll kind of just start with you when you hear that quick cut from Charleston White, kind of, again, just putting into the context of to now. What was your initial thoughts to what you heard Charleston mention? What did you think of when you heard that cut?
I thought of so many different things, and I'm truly trying to center it. And because I know we all come from diverse backgrounds and had diverse experiences, based on my experience, I agree a little with what Charleston said, just a little bit. I can see the impacts of it, however. On the grander scheme, I don't. And may I also ask this, Montoya, going forward, before we dive into this, can you help frame, or maybe Baba Oshie can help frame this discussion by defining culture, just to make sure we're all kind of moving along in the same direction?
Well, I'll turn it over to Baba Oshie. Any attempt to frame and define culture before we get your opinion of that cut, if you will, Baba Oshie. So if you could do that for Shanika, then just go into your opinion of that cut as you heard it.
Okay, thank you. Culture is what you are, who you are, all that you are, how you dress, how you talk, how you live, how you interact, how you treat others. That's culture. And in African culture, we had peace. Oh, yes, I'm quite sure there's conflict, but not to the point of extermination. So African culture in itself is what sustains us. African culture, just like the piece you played, what did it say? Because we here in America, we don't have African culture. What we have is a subculture, or what we have is a deviant culture. We pimp players, hustlers, gangsters, don't give a damn about our women, don't give a damn about our children. 20%. I mean, 80% of children being born are born without a father or a male present in the household. 80%, you know. Mm-hmm. Educational-wise, even though the schools we go to are the Europeans, but still at that, there can be some learning and should be some learning going on, and there isn't. So therefore, out of the 2 million people who are incarcerated in this country, and it's the most incarcerating country in the world, the so-called land of the free and home of the brave, about 40% is us, 40%. So when we understand the importance of culture, in fact, on my program, I read about this Caucasian named Lord, the hell is his name, Macaulay, who went into Africa before colonization and taking us out in captivity. And he said, I've spanned the breadth of Africa. Nowhere have I saw people who are beggars. Nowhere have I saw people who were, he said, they were intelligent, but he said, they're very strong in their spiritual belief. They're very strong in their culture. And he said, if we can make them believe that their culture is inferior and that British or European culture is superior, then we can get them. We'll get them. It won't be with guns and swords. They'll fight like hell. But we can psychologically.
Right. Baba Oshie, I'm kind of jumping in to just push to the context.
Sure, please.
Currently, where we're at currently, you know what I mean. And thank you for the definition of, if you will, the definition of culture. And I think that's very fair. Who we are, what we are, how we speak. So I think that's very fair. I definitely agree with that. And I know you briefly mentioned, in a sense. Some agreement with what you heard in the cut. I want to talk about where we're at now. We'll get to the history, but I want to talk about where we're at now, because we have to kind of, shoot and say, hey, here's who we were. I'm big into that. I promise you, history absolutely matters. But I think the way you walk back is to really get a feel of where we're at now. And I'll throw out this just to give you a little information on the numbers. I think you know this about me. I'm real particular about numbers. So just to give a little piece of clarity. So 73% of our children are born out of wedlock. But the actual fathers in the home, because, you know, that's just whether somebody's married or not. But just to give an accurate number, again, I'm not going against the numbers. It's just giving an accurate number. And it's about 56 their fathers are not in the home. So, you know, again, they're not always married, but it's not 80% of fathers not living in the home, just to give a piece of clarity on that. But again, just kind of dive into, if you will, the land lay of where we're at today. Like, are there aspects of culture that we're hanging into that are good, or is there nothing that we're hanging on to? Like I say, just starting with the initial aspect of the question, then we'll walk back through that history, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So you're asking me, is there some parts of what we're living in good for us? Well, I have to say.
The question is, do we still have black cultural values that serve us? You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's the
right.
The initial part of the question. So if we can walk backwards to where we're at today, I don't know if you think there are or not. I'm just saying, if we can start, do we have things that are still serving us? Because I think we have to be aware, if we're going to even have this, in my opinion, if we're going to have this discussion about culture, we have to be aware if there's anything serving us. And if there's not, I think Charleston White mentioned some things, right? Some things that are not serving us. I think we would all agree
right.
that are not serving us. And so, again, it's just kind of what's the land lay of where we're at now before we start it with the history. Let's go with where we're at now and work back
okay.
to the history, if that makes sense.
Okay. Well, in today, we live in America. America's about three things, individualism, materialism, greed, four things, I'm sorry, individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what the society perpetuates. As a consequence, for us, we follow suit. As far as I'm concerned, and I mean to say it like this, okay, where it is broadly known, there's always some exceptions. There's always some exceptions where we are helping each other, supporting each other. There's always some brothers and sisters who definitely will buy from one another. You know, I mean, we live in Atlanta. Atlanta doesn't have a supermarket. That is us. That's a damn shame. All these people talking about Atlanta is Wakanda. Atlanta ain't no damn Wakanda. They don't even have a supermarket, nor do they have a service station convenience store in Atlanta with all these folks. Six million people in the metropolitan area. Of the 6 million, damn near 2 million are us. So it's ridiculous. So when you look at it like that, the parts of our culture that are serving us, and once again, understand, the culture has not been ours. Those Europeans have imposed their culture on us. In fact, if you understand that when there is something of African culture being displayed, that is also for some of us something to not gravitate to, something for us, you know, not to embrace because we've been trained not to. So, in essence, no, because it is not ours. There are some things that help us survive individually, because once again, as I said, America's about individualism. But it ain't about you. It ain't about me. It is about us.
All right, fair enough. I'm interested in what you said, Shanika, in the sense of when you heard the cut from Charleston, that you mostly disagreed. I think that's what I understood you to say. And I'll also just kind of mention this but real briefly, but Oshie, and I'll get back to it. I actually would say us working together is not the exception. And I'll, you know, give kind of where my context is. I think often how we look at the landscape is in a sense that we actually say things are exceptions that are absolutely the norm. And then sometimes we actually take the exceptions and highlight them because a lot of them, some of those things are very bad. We actually highlight them as if they're the norm because bad news travels. And so I would offer that we actually work together way more than we actually recognize sometimes. But before I get, you know, too deep into that, Shanika, what is it that Charleston, you know, mentioned that you said, you know what, I agree with it somewhat, but mostly not. I think it's how you said it. So kind of dig into that mostly not. I'm very curious, you know, what that meant for you.
Okay. One of the things I struggle with often, and I think I've shared with you, Montoya, is trying to make a distinction between my reality and actual reality, right? I know we often talk about social media life and what's actually happening in the world.
Right.
And with that, my struggle is, and I'm going to lean into what you said, when I look at my immediate surroundings, I do see individuals helping each other. I see individuals supporting one another. But outside of my immediate community or my circle of friends and family, I'm not sure if that's happening on a grand scale. So that's what my struggle is. So when I look at media, whether it's on TV, the radio, social media, I do see all these influences, these negative influences that Baba Oshie, he's referencing as well, that I agree is not our own. You know, it's characteristics we've picked up and adopted from being here. I'm just not sure if I'm looking at it from my individual perspective or if this is truly a grand thing that's happening across the board.
Now, I love that perspective, and I'll let you kind of respond to her as well as kind of what I'm saying, and I'll see what you think of this. So I think what you're saying right now, Sadiqa, is the nuance, and it's, the, in a sense, in my opinion, the correct way to capture actually what's happening. Like, I don't deny, cannot deny, it would be foolish to do so, to deny the negative influences that Charleston, you know, mentioned in that cut, right? The pimp and the gangster and all these type of things that we, like is that are very much part of pop culture, very much pushed throughout the media. Those are so in a sense you see them all the time. So I would not deny the negative influence and that impact has played a huge role, because we're gonna walk through that nuance throughout this show. So I'm owning the role that it plays. I own that it influences, in a sense, more. I'll just kind of focus on the children for this comment. It influenced our children to go more in the wrong direction. I personally remember trying to balance my home values up against what I was seeing in the media, if you will. And you know, and now that I'm an older man, realize the immaturity and some of the things that I would put, you know, up front. But it was always up against me having a, in a sense, I would say, a fortunate Southern upbringing with decent amount of values. While of course those things tested my values, I didn't always pass that test, if you will, but for the most part, I fell back into those values. And I would offer, the reality is, when I say the reality is people doing well and for one another isn't the exception, because at the end of the day, even those prison numbers, if you will, Baba Oshi, is such a small percentage of our community that are wrapped up in that. The majority of the community are not doing these things, even though they are propagated. So that's why I push back against saying us doing for each other, us following these bad influences are the norm. Again, I think I'm trying to give a good degree of the influence is pushing us in the wrong direction, but I see the majority of us still not failing those tests, if you will. Your thoughts, brother?
Well, I understand that a lot of us want to accentuate positive, and I understand that, and we should, you know, but not to the point that we're romanticizing about it, that something that is not truly happening, that we need to acknowledge the fact that this deviant behavior, this irrational behavior, all this craziness is happening. It is happening to us by design, you see. So, you know, shouldn't we have a better business acumen? Shouldn't we have people who can put in business and we can employ our youth? I look at a situation like this. Here I've been around Atlanta now for quite a few years and know that we are everywhere in this state. We have subdivisions, we have cul-de-sacs, we have, you know, all kinds of stuff. But yet, even in those places, they don't say, hey y'all, let's come together. We got these beautiful homes, manicured lawns, immaculate inside the house. Let us pull our money together and down the road, let's build a strip mall. Let's build a strip mall with stores and businesses and restaurants and so forth, and we can employ our kids. Nowhere. When I first moved here to DeKalb County off of Lawrenceville Highway, the Indians from India have a lot of stores. In fact, they have a strip mall. They have a strip mall with furniture stores, a restaurant, sit-down restaurant, takeout restaurant, grocery store, convenience store, and, of course, jewelry and their apparel. They do. And I'm quite sure their community is small, and the fact that we have been here for so long and we don't have it. Why? Because we have been trained to believe that the Caucasian ice is colder and that we can't come together, that we can't trust each other, we can't believe in each other, we can't pull our money together to do things. You see? So, given
so
the
brother,
fact
let me say
that
this. I got about a minute before break. Yeah, so I'll go ahead and finish your comment. Finish your comment. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go to the break, and I'll finish up when I come back.
Okay.
When you come back.
So yeah. Okay, got you. And so I'll tell you that I disagree 100% with we think that the white man's ice is colder, and I'll definitely give you that response out of this break. And we do currently have Black Wall Street
out in Conyers that just opened last year, and there's another strip mall about to open that I'm privy to. I just got wind of about a month ago, so looking forward to that opening as well. But two, I will, to your point, does not negate the reality of the fact that we haven't had them. So I'm not highlighting, and I don't do this, I don't highlight exceptions as if they're the norm. Not doing it at all. I was just pointing out that there is one and another one about to open, just to highlight that information. Again, not making the exception the norm. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Yeah, but Africa ain't built no ship and came back over here and rescued one nigga since we left from Africa. Yeah, and Africans don't like us. Yeah, nigga, Africans don't fuck with us. They don't like us. And they stink. Yeah, and they some stinky people. Yeah, niggas, fuck Africa. Yeah, they ain't our people. We niggas, slaves, the descendants of slaves. They was never called no nigga. The first group of Africans, only one generation. Now the first group came. They wasn't born into this shit. Me and your people was born into this, homie. They were born slaves. They birth certificates say nigga. They was born in Africa. They are not us. They know what tribe they come from. They had a language. Once they broke them from the language and we was born in these conditions. We ain't no Africans. We ain't no Hebrew. We nigger. Bottom line, homie.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Shanika Peterson. This morning's discussion question, do we still have black cultural values that serve us? Our special guest is Baba Oshie from Black African Perspective Radio, as we play an incendiary cut from Charleston White. And so if you haven't listened to the show, let me really lay the context for how we do these texts, these cuts. And the cuts is not about whether we agree or disagree with Charleston White. The dialogue is there's nuance in what he's saying that I think has to be discussed, because there's an unfortunate reality. Anytime that we go discussing the idea of culture within our community, there's this idea, unfortunately, of whether we are African or not. That is something that always gets put out there to a degree, right? And then for those who, like a Charleston White, who says we're not, then there's this dialogue about, well, what does Black American culture look like? And so I just use the incendiary cut just to highlight the nuance of, yeah, what does it look like that our immediate ancestors, in a sense, had to form some type of culture with their language and culture being completely broken from them. And so to kind of bring it into today's discussion is, if that's their reality, were they able to ever, in a sense, create any black culture that can still serve us today, being in that unique position of being detached from our ancestors? Baba Oshie, I know I said a lot there, but I'll kind of jump there before I go back to the ISIS colder comment. I want to still kind of move through the context of the show, versus, just getting hung up on point for a point, if that makes sense. So just a dialogue about that separation and what did that look like for our ancestors, knowing that you're always wanted to make that connection. How do we move today when that wasn't our ancestors' reality, if that makes sense?
Well, the reality is this, is that once again, ties were severed, like they cannot be repaired. The fact that you heard the when you're a breakaway, that we're not African, just, of course, bothers the heck out of me, because we are African. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're not black. We are not black. Black is a color. African. When you, Dr. John Henry Clark said, you talk about a people, you should use a word that conjures up land, history, and culture. A noun, person, place, or thing. A color is like a verb. It describes what it is. We're African. We're African people. You know, and the idea of what your breakaway was that Africans stink. They don't want us. We don't want them. We this, we that. No, we are African. All of us. We're African. And the sooner we can embrace that, the sooner we can come into real sovereignty and African power. We can control the resources on the continent. We can control the land on the continent. Our problem, the problem is this. We want to be here. we want to be in this situation where Caucasians will always dominate and maintain control. And yet we
so
want
can
to
I, let me challenge
nasty,
you,
rotten ass
pot. Let me challenge you on this, Baba Oshie, from this standpoint. So as I listen to you, and I highlight the idea of that culture, like you said, involves land, how you talk, how we speak. And so while I am a fan, and we've done several shows of this, I am a fan of bridging, quote unquote, that gap, because, again, it was severed. I agree 100% with that. So I am a fan of closing that gap. I would say you have to close the gap in a realistic way, and I would offer that simply saying we're Africans is a romanticized concept from the standpoint of it's not realistically how you build culture. So even in the, for example, the friendships and some of the business that some of our members actually do with brothers, you know, across the water, if you will. Again, a big promoter of that, a big fan of that. I often say, hey, we shouldn't just sit here and compete for old money in America when there's global money that we can compete with easily with our African brethren and sisters, if you will. So again, big advocate of it, but I would offer the realistic perspective is, a lot of times when, you know, visiting the continent, if you will, I haven't been fortunate enough trying to set up my first trip, hopefully next year, but I haven't been fortunate enough to visit the country, but based on members of the club and a lot of friends that I know who have traveled, that we are distinctly American, and in a sense, going to the continent for the first time, at least what I've heard. And Shamika, you just took the trip, so you can let me know if any of this exists or whatever, but it's very understood that it is a very, you come from, in a sense, a very different culture. And I don't know how realistic it is to just mesh the two versus valuing, like, two cultures typically come together. Oh, you got this.
Well, see, once
I
again, brother,
that.
Brother,
here's where our synergy can be. And you go forward without trying to melt the cultures. I don't know how realistic it is to move forward that way. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
What it is this. It is one culture, and that is African, because the culture here amongst American Africans, or those who identify themselves not as African but don't want to identify themselves as black, is a very deviant culture, because what it says is that I really want to be white. You know, I really want to – I
so
want what they have.
What
you're
going, what you're going there, but
I want the cars. I want the
ask,
job.
Yes,
I want the promotion. I want his woman, you see. That's what it says.
So, right, but what I'm asking about you and me as a brother. What I'm saying is Africans don't even – like even the term African was handed to us. I'm talking about the fact that the world says African.
No, I got to stop you. No,
Africa
it is not.
Not our own word.
The word
Africans
Africa
have their own cultures within the
country. Brother, look up Renoka Rashidi. Look up Dr. John Henry Clark. That word is not. That word comes up. That is an indigenous African word. Okay, Al-Kabalon
okay,
is not even an African word. That's not an African word.
Of the 300 tribes on the continent, they quite often feel they have different culture, and that's realistic based on the region that they're in, based on the foods they eat, based on their customs. If we say culture, all these things,
then we also have to identify all of the various cultures on the continent itself. So that's why I say we romanticize and become unrealistic when even there's, and that's every continent. Every continent has, the United States itself, the different regions of the country have different cultures, southern culture versus northern culture.
But it's
versus
still
West.
American
so,
culture. It is still, even though you say that, because there's different foods and different regions, different ways they do things are different, but it's still American. And my point is, there's a cultural continuity on the continent of Africa. You got to read our scholars, our historians. You got to read Dr. Sikandar Job. You got to see. I'm saying to you, brothers, this, and I'm sincere. You know, the reason why we are in the situation that we are in is because we are fragmented, and that fragmentation has come from the evilness of those who impose their culture on us and who have denigrated and demeaned and degraded us.
I 100% understand that point. And so the dialogue is to not get defragmented and for us to continue. And we're doing it right now. We're trying to dialogue on what we can do. And when you say what we can do, I think it's too simplified and too romanticized to lay it that way versus, again, the examples of people who are coming together and working together with Nigerian brothers here in Atlanta. Like, that stuff happens all the time. And so I think when we get an idea of you asked a question earlier when you were like, why don't we have a strip mall? Again, I highlight the one or whatever. And you know, for example, you mentioned that the Indians have one. Well, the actual circumstances for why those people from India have one versus why they have one, when you actually look into the circumstances, it's not simply we don't come together versus what situation were they set up in to have that strip ball. So if you show me that there are blacks or Africans who are able to, in a sense, go down that path and chose not to, then I would agree with you. But then when we understand, and I'm pretty sure you're aware of this, quite often where there are incentives for immigrant communities based on meeting criteria to even come into the country. And in a sense, if they meet that criteria, those incentives will be set aside in order for them to go into the industry that they agreed to before they came here. So when you say why do they have one and they're a small community, that's a very different circumstance than just an American and specifically a black American. I'm not making an excuse. I'm highlighting that if you highlight it's a different circumstance, then that's the why. It's not simply we won't come together.
I understand
like,
what you're
unfair.
Saying there because they have been given, in certain situations, they have been given, when they came into the country, some privileges and some opportunities and some money. Okay, but by the same token, I look at Black Wall Street in Stonecrest here in Georgia, east of Atlanta. And opening, even before it opened, excited about it, excited to hear about it, you know, and went into right before it opened and a few times later. The problem I have is that I wish Mr. Allen, who was at the State of the Black World Conference in Baltimore a month ago, which was not too good, not the conference itself, but anyway.
Okay.
And he talked about what, and people applauded him and so forth, but you need to see it because what should have happened, he needed to have all the money. He needed to open Black Wall Street up properly, fully, with a lot of advertisement and so forth. There are so many businesses that went in there from the initial who are now gone. There's so many areas that are just barren. They're just not occupied, you know. And some of the things they said they were going to do, it didn't happen. I think that's sad, you know, because he could have advertised this throughout the Southeast as a place to come and get real values and shopping and so forth, you know, but it didn't happen that way. I hope and pray that they hang on and hold on. But if they continue to lose stores, and the last three times I've gone to Black Wall Street, I'm looking at the parking lot, and I'm saying this damn lot should be full. You know, it's a former Target, so it's a huge parking lot. You know, you go in there, okay,
There's a few couple of people in each little store. Some are hanging on. I asked some of the vendors how they're doing. They said, well, we're doing okay. We're doing good. I know a couple of personally, you know. But my point is that is a history of we need to come together and say, this is ours. This is for us. We need to support this. I may pay a little more here, but I will do that to maintain this. I have seen in my lifetime, I'm over 70 years old.
Yep. Now, it makes sense. We're up against the break, Brother Oshie. So we're going to go to the break. And Brother Pianchi out of St. Louis wanting to get in on the call as well. For all the callers
Brother
out there,
Paul,
sorry,
man,
I haven't
Brother
opened
Pianchi.
The phone.
You got Brother.
Yeah. Brother Pianchi about to get on with us after this break. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
And for all the other callers out there, yeah, I do have to press one. Brother Pianchi's a longtime caller, so he knows that. I haven't opened up the phone lines. I will open up the phone lines for the rest of the show. Sneaky, we will be jumping you in here as well. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Listening to It's a Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Actually, this is just to give y'all a heads up. This is actually a cut that I actually want a response to. So what I'll do is have y'all respond to this cut, then we'll go to Brother Pianchi. We'll have y'all both of you respond to this cut, then we'll go to Brother Pianchi out of the cut.
Okay.
All right, sounds good. I gotta pull it up, y'all. Sorry, I usually have it pulled up. I'm a little slow on the boards today. I got to find the cut, y'all. I'm sorry. I might have typed it in wrong. Okay. All right. Bear with me, y'all. I got to go into the board and out of the board to get the cut to play. This is a very important cut, so I got to play it. All right. Here we go. Matter of fact, let's do this. Brother Pianchi, go ahead and get your 3 cents off. Go ahead and get your 3 cents off, and then I'll play the cut coming out of Brother Pianchi's comments. All right, Brother Pianchi, what you got for us, King?
Well, first I want to say good morning to Oshie.
Hey, Brother Pianchi, how you doing, man? All right.
I'm doing fine. I talked to Webster
good.
This morning here in the States for graduation. But I've heard these conversations before. And those that have them, like yourself, are very heartfelt and believe in them. The only thing is that you got to get other people to believe in that too. And that's, in fact, where lies the problem. And that problem exists because simple people are not the same. And we all know that. So I'm not going to talk down against the idea. All I'm saying is, you got a long road ahead of you, and every turn is not going to be a straight one. But I'm going to let you guys go ahead and finish, and Milwaukee is missing you, so I'll talk to you later on.
Okay.
Absolutely. Man, I think I cannot find this cut. I'm so upset about this. All right, y'all, let's keep this thing moving. I'm very upset about this. I'm going to try to get this cut pulled up at the next break. I wanted to lay out some of the history of where black culture specifically in America comes from. A lot of times we have it confused on some of the things that we hold on to culturally, like even if all the way down to how we talk, even some of the actions that we heard of Charleston White, if you will, talk about to a degree we don't actually realize, I think, in current times where some of these actions come from, and I think it's really key. Let me try. I'm trying to get this cut to play real quick. I'm going to get it to play. I'm sorry. I was counting on this. Oh, man. I feel crazy right now not having this prepared, but it's too critical for me to try to explain the cut versus just playing it very succinctly, because I have another cut related to it to go through this. So I'm pulling it up right now. I'm actually reloading it so I can play it. And this would be a good way to end this segment, and then we'll go to the top of the hour. All right, so let's go here. All right, y'all out there listening, I'm actually always on the show producing as I speak on the show. So this is not technical difficulty. This is a, I will admit, a producer mistake. Didn't have it uploaded correctly. I'm going to try to play this joint right now, but it's so critical to the show that I got to do it. For any callers, if y'all want to get in, all you have to do is press 1. We will get you in on this morning's discussion. I see a lot of callers out there, so if y'all want to join us, please press 1, and we'll get your 3 cents on this discussion. Shanika, any quick thoughts about what Brother Piafi said? Always cool to connect, dialogue, and connect is what we do, so pretty dope that one of our longtime callers already knows Baba Oshie, so obviously that's always dope to, for that to happen. But, yeah, any thoughts on him just saying, hey, he loves what Baba Oshie's saying. The idea is you got to get more people, in a sense, to buy into it. And because, you know, everybody's not the same as what I think I heard Brother Piafi say. So, yeah, give me a response, and I'll play the clip right after your response.
Oh, well, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And even listening to you and Baba Oshie express your thoughts on today's discussion, I think – you all are saying a lot, and there's also a through line that's common amongst, I'll say, melanated folks. And if we kind of focus on those commonalities, I know, Baba Oshie, you know, you spoke about some of those African things or principles and characteristics that are completely opposite of American. So when we talk about the violence, when we talk about the individualistic way in which we approach things, those are European concepts that we have adopted. And I think the biggest thing is for us to recognize those things that do not serve us, such as the individualism, mm-hmm. the violence, recognize it. And I think we're having a difficult time recognizing it in today's society to even move towards going back to our African-centered traditions and principles. So when I spoke earlier about, you know, I'm kind of on the fence because in my small world, I do see the community. I do see the family. I do see those things. It's just on the bigger platform, I struggle to see that. So I hear both of you. I absolutely hear both of you, Montoya and Baba Oshie. I think now that we understand that, again, we have to be very intentional in recognizing those negative right. aspects that we've adopted from European culture and move toward our African principles that I think are still in us, Baba Oshie. I think we still have it in us, but I just think the everyday influence of, you know, scratching and surviving and just trying to, you know, I guess that competition, getting what other people
Let me say this real quick because I want to get this cut in before the break. So sorry to cut you off, but I'll just say this. Like when you say that scratch and survive, whatever, because I always highlight that people in that condition, this is how all people, regardless of race or ethnicity, in a sense, will respond to certain stimuli. And so sometimes we identify with something that's just a result of the stimuli, and we unfairly say that's quote unquote who we are, and you know, and obviously that's the kind of stuff I fight against, if you will. Let me play this cut and get both of y'all opinions before we go to the top of the hour. All right, let's see. I think I got it pulled up correctly. If I don't have it pulled up right this time, I'm gonna be mad at myself. and I'm sitting here looking at the button. I had it pulled up. Now the button went away. Man, okay, now it is starting to be technical issues, y'all. It ain't just me. I didn't have it pulled up right the first time, but now it's not letting me hit the play button. All right, hold on. I literally had it queued up. All right, why is it not letting me hit the play button? It's not letting me hit the play. I can't play any cuts right now. All right, something's going on, y'all. I can't play any cuts. All right, we're about to go.
I just want to kind of emphasize, jokingly use the term scratching and surviving, but I'm talking about everybody across the board. But since we're focusing on us as a community, I just think the American culture of the capitalism and everybody just trying to get the materialism just keeps everybody attention focused on that as opposed to the communal aspect. So that's what I meant, not necessarily a black thing or a poor thing or anything like that. It's just being distracted with trying to get the most. Trying to get more than the next person, that's all.
No, no, I understood that. All right, y'all. So I'm the whole dynamic of the show has changed. I can't play any cuts, and I do rely on them, I will admit. But, yeah, we can pull this off without any. So we're going commercial-free. We've got a lot of callers I want to get y'all through since then. Please press 1 if y'all want to join us. We are definitely having to remix this show because I now am having technical difficulties. All right, let's go to area code 609, last 3891. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. Six oh nine, last 3891. Can y'all still hear me?
I hear you.
Shanika?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. 609-891, going once. Going twice, you just raise your hand. All right. I don't know why they're not talking. I see that number quite often. All right, let's keep it going ourselves. All right, now it's all going around. People are trying to get in. I guess I don't know why I can't hear them. I don't know what's going on with the social, with the internet. It's might, maybe some internet issues. All right, here we go. All right, that threw me off. So here's, let me go back to something earlier, Bob Oshie. Let me tell you why I adamantly disagree with we think the white man's ISIS code. And I think that'll kind of weave us through some of this dialogue as well. You know, we are remixing and just kind of going off track with the show. But I think we have misunderstood and unfairly assessed what our ancestors here in America, our black American ancestors in America did for us. I think we completely mess up the historical context of when we transitioned through the civil rights period. Like, we say stuff now, and I read them same teachers and learned a lot and used to say some of these same things. But as I dig deeper, read more history, get more context of the times, I have changed from saying we think the white man's ISIS colder because I used to say it to get full context. And the reason I say I've changed is because when I really went through and got more history of actually why there was a concept to even quote-unquote integrate, and based on having some successful black enclaves during those times. Now, I think we romanticize how many black enclaves we had, while we can point to a high number now, but in the context of the number of African-Americans that were able to participate or be a part of those black enclaves that were highly successful, such as Black Wall Street, that we also all love to highlight now, it still ended up being a very small percentage of our community, quote-unquote, prior to integration. But the bigger point is the integration, once I learned, was more about seeking protection, if you will, in the courtroom. When I understood that was the bigger point for doing so, there wasn't a concept of us in those black enclaves where we had our own thing, where we in the enclaves where we were doing well. Our ancestors did not run out of those successful businesses to be able to go to the white man's business as it has been projected by some of our master teachers today. When we had our own thing, we kept supporting our own thing. And Baba Oshi, you're aware of some of this history. When you actually go to the specifics to what happened to those enclaves, it usually wasn't by happenstance that those enclaves didn't exist. Everybody knows about Tulsa now, but you and I both know there were plenty of quote-unquote Tulsas, even if it wasn't as well known. And so it wasn't, those enclaves did not disintegrate because we would not or did not support our own. And if you can agree with that, then don't believe our ancestors ran out of our businesses over to the white man's business. That is not how it happened, even though that's how we say it today.
Well, understand your that. understand that we had to rely on each other coming out of our captivity. We had to, deep segregation, they would not sell to us. They wanted to sell something to us. You had to go to the back door. You're constantly degraded and demeaned. and so forth. So we developed places. So we developed towns like Rosewood, Florida, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Boley, Oklahoma. You know, I could go on. Even Allentown in Los Angeles area. All of these places, Elaine, Arkansas, all those places were destroyed. They were destroyed by Caucasians, jealous, envious, evil, mean-spirited. And, of course, made us, after the coming into the 50s, into the 60s, when we're fighting for civil rights and our ability to go wherever we want to move wherever our money could take us, to buy who from wherever we. Once again, I'm saying, because what happened was we did not rely on each other like we did previously and became successful and helped each other. We relied on the goodness of white folks to allow us. And, of course, hey, you can come spend money here. Your money is good. In fact, I target your money. I want you to come here, you know. And so here's the thing that happened in the
wall. That's unfair.
Huh?
That's unfair, Bubba Oshie. That's unfair when you give the list of on and on, because I can agree with that list. I've seen that list. I've done the research. And so we do have those black enclaves, but the way we romanticize it this way. And this is very unfair to being respectful to how our actual culture is. I'm going to bring it back to today's conversation, but it is absolutely unfair to think that as we like to, this is how we romanticize it. We say we relied on ourselves, so we created these towns and these cities and had our own. That's what we like to say today. I say like to say because even when I go look at those enclaves, you can now go do the research and realize that was about 2% of African Americans who were able to enjoy those enclaves. The reason that a third of African Americans that never migrated during the 70-year migration out of the South, if you will, stayed sharecropping is because a lot of people left with nothing. The government goes back on its 48 acres and a mule promise or whatever and left with nothing. There were so many people desolate to the point where there were whole towns buried strictly off of starvation. Those are realities as well. I love to highlight the enclaves. But when I realized 98% of the community decided, oh, well, I don't want to go through that. I'll just stay on my enslaver's property and BS sharecropping period.
Hold on. I think you're misreading me, and I don't want to give the impression that that was the majority or that was the rule. No, those were
exceptions. No, you haven't given the impression, haven't given the impression. But the reason I'm going through that nuance, and just work with me, Bob Osha. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I just want to go through the nuance. The reason I'm highlighting that is because I know you're not saying it's the majority, but I'm highlighting that when we say it and leave it there without the full context, you realize the destroying of those black enclaves is why integration was even sought. We haven't been taught that history. We haven't been taught the history that we want to be able to get justice in the courtroom in the event that the Caucasians you're talking about come and destroy a city when there was no recompense. So we now teach, even our master teachers teaches our black children, we were trying to be next to the white man. No, we were trying to ensure that if we built up a business, it couldn't be destroyed without recompense. That's a very different aim, and that's the reality of the reign. And we can take, you've seen this, MLK talking about support our black banks, support our own things or whatever. We actually say we lost that. We've never lost that. We've never lost it. When we line up any black business right now, if it is an openly black business, its customers are black. So it's crazy to not realize context in how we speak. And when we don't realize the context, we're not paying attention to the values that we actually have. We're upset at all of the bad things we look at. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
But understand that when we do open up a business, the more than likely a patron is going to be us, because that is the history. It's going to be us. And
right.
So
why do we say we don't support our business? Yeah, I mean, why do we say that? We openly say we don't support our business. And you just, and what you just said is the actual fact that their patron is going to be us more than likely. So it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's a contradiction that we're unaware of in our language. And like,
well, I'm not being contradictory. I'm being historical because even though we opened that business was not totally supported by us because number one of segregation. You may not want to travel 10 miles to come to my store when the Caucasian has some stores in between that 10 miles that will take your money. You know, you may not understand how important it is that we do travel 10 miles to support, because maybe by your support and other support, I build another store closer to you. I build two other stores to employ our people and to employ our youth. We don't understand that.
Right.
And so as a consequence,
but it's again, you're asking us to understand something that no group in the world has ever done or will do. And I'm being very specific with what I'm saying. I'm being very extreme in what I'm saying is because I think the reason is that we have to get to nuance and understand the reality
because the money that is in the hands of Indians circles in that community 3, 4, 5 times before it goes out. The European Jews, the money circles in that community 3, 4, 5 times before it goes out. Other communities, 3, 4, 5, the money comes to our hands and immediately goes out. The money does not circulate. What we're saying is this. We've developed a different mindset. We're African people, whether you want to believe that or not. We're African people. And as soon as we embrace our Africanness, and study and understand who we are as a people, we can support one another, trust one another, build with one another. And that is not here in America. That's globally. We as an African people are the land that Africa has, everybody wants. Think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell, damn it, don't want to pay for it. Everybody's up in Africa. You got Chinese marrying Africans so they can stake a claim in Africa. You got Arabs. In fact, the Indians are trying to once again take back Uganda. If you remember the movie Mississippi Masala, if you don't remember it, check it out with Denzel Washington. It was about the Indians who lived in Uganda who were kicked out by Idi Amin, came to America and had restaurants, had those hotels and liquor stores and so forth. When other people come here, they don't say, can you hire me? Give me a job. No, they pull their resources and they support one another to build their businesses, which usually are directed at our people. We are a targeted consumer group, targeted by Arabs.
Let me get some of these callers in and see if I can. I'm gonna attempt to see if I can get a caller
if you will. Thank you.
Again, I'm just giving it a shot, y'all. If you're a caller, I'm having some trouble with the board, so I'm hoping it's gonna get someone in. Area code 443, last 3805. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's session.
Good morning, Baba Oshie. This is Brother Urban Lewis calling from Baltimore.
Hey, my brother. How you doing, man? Good to hear you.
How are you, my brother? The brothers that you're with are amazing. They're spitting such knowledge, and I'm getting so much out of this conversation. And what I want to interject is the mindset of integration. And when I say the mindset of integration, what I'm talking about is when the brother said, he made a couple of comments about that white people's ice is not colder. And I hear that, and I've heard that all my life. I'm 65 years old. But I also, when I look at what white people do and how they move, you look at Jackie Robinson going into baseball. Black people clapped and did backflips, and we're integrating baseball. But in actuality, were you actually integrating baseball, or were you extinguishing the Negro Leagues? Were you extinguishing all the hotels that the people used when they came around to see these, they followed these teams and all the money they spent? Were you getting rid of black businesses in order to go into a white business that looked more shiny, that looked more new, that looked like they had everything? Because they did. they did. We are raised to be consumers, and we have to. We live in a level of comfortability. In other words, Baba Oshie said, "Why don't you drive a few miles to go to the black store and pass these white stores?" That's uncomfortable. But we have been raised in this European mindset to believe that I have to have mine right now. That the Asian looks generations down the road. I'm going to sacrifice and live over top of this Chinese store, and my children's children will be able to do something. But we have taken on, not everybody, have taken on this European mindset that I'm going to get mine. I'm going to have my Cadillac today. I'm going to have my car today, and I have made it. I have made it. We're the only group of people. You're absolutely real quick. I'm gonna bring it home real quick. We're the only group of people that, because we're not in Africa, we don't believe that Africa's in us. Africa is in you, whether you want to believe it or not. The pigment in your skin, you can walk in the room and be a Jew and say, "I'm from Germany," because I don't know where you're from. You're white. But a black man has pigment in his skin. He can't hide this melanin we got going on. And this melanin is something that everybody wants. And I think what it boils down to is comfortability. We have to live in uncomfortable states so our children can live comfortable tomorrow. Brother, thank you for letting me speak. I enjoy your show, and I'm going to listen to the rest of it. Thank you. Peace.
No, I appreciate you. So I'm always about context. And so the Chinese immigrant that comes and lives over the top of the house, and this is – I've talked about this before because people make reference to immigration – it's an apples to oranges conversation that we don't often recognize and understand. And so what happens is when you see that 1% is coming over here under them circumstances and you see them make that sacrifice, we'll equate that to the culture, but don't have the realistic view that in their very own country, there's, in particular Asian countries, way more poor people that live like that in their own country. Black, I've highlighted this before, black Americans that go abroad, the majority of them are extremely successful. A lot of them, some people fail and come back and don't make it wherever they choose to go abroad. But it is always a mistake to even make reference to immigrants coming to a country, because it is quite normal for those who immigrate to a country to surpass the citizens of that very country, regardless of race. That's pretty consistent around the world. And so we're correct when we say they're making that sacrifices, but when you realize the percentage of them that are living like that, I can give you that same percentage within our own community who would choose to make those type of sacrifices to succeed in whatever industry it is. We have communities, we have people in our community. And if I'm being real clear here, is the comparison is apples to oranges, is because we're highlighting the top 5% of a certain community and say, look at how they, and we'll say they as if most of the culture acts that way. But if you put our top 5% against their top 5%, you'll just see humans have figured out what it takes to be successful in that market based on the country that they're in. And like there are places right now in South America where there are black expatriates, that those people, that culture, can literally be saying, look at how those black Americans over there move, because they got more things than the people that live in that country. There's places in South America right now where thriving black patriot communities, and you go to those communities quite often when people say, I don't want to live here no more, I don't want to deal with this stuff in the U.S. If they know about those communities, they go there and plug right in. Very successful life, and I love to highlight how they live better than they ever lived in America. In those countries, those black Americans can be talked about like we talk about these Chinese Americans. It's lack of context. It's lack of context to think that there is a mindset over the circumstances that most people respond the exact same way. And it's like, once we understand that, then we can push. Here's where we agree, Brother Oshie. We can push those values that will have you be successful anywhere you live in the world.
And so the goal should be, how do we keep, kind of to what Shanika said earlier, how do we keep whatever African principles that we decide and need to keep, how do we propagate them? And I would offer, and I think I know you would agree with this, is more dialogues of how we teach our children, or at a minimum, if you're stuck sending your children to, for example, a public school, let's have conversations about how you can assist your own black child so as to negate the aspects of where they will lose themselves, for example, in the public school system. I'll throw out, for example, this quick little stat and let you and Shanika both jump in. It's, now that the callers are working, I'll get another caller in as well, now that I got that working. But let me throw this little quick stat out just to, you know, just as a small example, because at the end of the day, we have to keep fighting currently as it stands, if you will. So, like, for example, speaking of the school system, they've done this study. Let me see if I can see who did the study. I think I forgot to. I was about to try to give the source. All right, I forgot to keep the source on this one. But, for example, they see increases for our black children in a sense that don't live near, that don't, you know, like we're lucky we live in Atlanta, so this is a non-issue. But I grew up in a place that was 21% black, right? Never had a black teacher, if you will. But, for example, they've done studies showing having a black teacher increases graduation rates, and for those that want to go to college, increases those going to college. Just having two significantly increases the success of our black students. So a dialogue about values is, you know, for example, how do we see education? So a corrective step versus only complaining about what was done with us would be, how can we ensure that we scale more black teachers getting into the school system and keep encouraging, you know, the African-centered schools that are doing, that are super successful, because there are plenty of them that are, keep encouraging those. But as a culture, let's speak about increasing black teachers when we see significant improvement just for something as simple as that. So I guess I'm just trying to dialogue through practical stuff currently as is and not be so focused on all that was done and how, and just kind of practically get to bridging the gap, because I want to bridge the gap. I don't know if I'm making that clear, but I know we need to bridge the gap. I think practical steps have to be put in context. I'll shut up there, and now Shanika, give me a quick thought, and then let me hear Baba Oshie, then we'll go to another caller.
Okay. I agree with you. I agree both of you on various levels. I think for this discussion, we absolutely need to understand our history, and in doing so, highlight those things that are beneficial for us collectively. Again, going back to those African principles of community, of family, working together, understanding that with, along with understanding where we are in society and what's working against us. Like, we have to acknowledge what's working against us. And again, I think too many of us are so distracted by all of this other stuff that's going on in society that we can't even focus on those things that benefit us to move toward this collective and what we're speaking of.
Well, go ahead, Brother Oshie, and then we'll call it.
Okay. Yeah. You know, once again, I'm speaking in the African collective. I'm a Pan-Africanist. So I firmly believe, I have zero, zilch, not an ounce of faith in this system to benefit African people. Some of us individually, but what you do as an individual is weak and pale in comparison to what we could do as a collective, as we could do as a group of people coming together. You know, in fact, individualism is a European or Caucasian desire. Collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. Because
so let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Brother Oshie. Yeah, let me. So on the collectivism, what do you feel like you have an example? Because
because I think we get broad, in my opinion, we get broad and unrealistic when we don't have an example in history of collectivism happening across a continent.
We have examples in history for sure. All throughout
Africa, we have an example
in history here in this country. The only thing that we have an example here is when you've seen those towns I mentioned previously coming together, being collective and doing what they do to support one another and themselves, which were ultimately destroyed by Caucasians out of their jealousy and envy of us, and then which totally fragmented us going well into the 40s and 50s, and then into the 60s. In that particular struggle, it was a struggle for rights. Let us go to your schools. Let us move into your neighborhood. Let us, and of course, that further divided us.
I'm all about context. I love to highlight those black enclaves, like you said, Winston-Salem, Rosewood, Tulsa. I love to highlight because we didn't grow up and learn about them. So when I learned about them, amazing. We put them on a pedestal. But the context of collectivism, as you're saying it, is not particularly how it happened. This is how it happened. Let me break down a little details of how it happened. And what I find studying history in various groups, it's always a few that find, say, oh, you got the collective value that I have, you have the same values that I have, you have this, and then they move forward and advance particular people within the group. Here's the reality of Tulsa. It wasn't the collective black people coming together. It was a couple of people that had been freed, had enough money to purchase some land, smartly, and a lot of times I can highlight their names, they're not coming to my mind right now, but smartly, based on being, they wanted to make sure the land only went to others that looked like them, which was smart for protection because all around you are white people. But here's who they're selling it to, 1% that could afford land. And so they only invited particular African Americans to be a part of Tulsa.
Well,
and we highlight it and romanticize it. Like,
yeah, they understood. They understood that they needed people who had the wherewithal to come there, you know. But there were other smaller communities that relied on each other, like Elaine, Arkansas, because that was a working community. And then when they tried to come together to say to that city, to that town, we need better working conditions. They were meeting in a church. Dealing with the Caucasian vamped on them in the church and killed them, shot them up.
And I just keep pointing out, here's where we're missing each other. Yeah, I know you keep pointing out that example, and I'm saying we don't understand the context for those ancestors, that reality happened so much that at no point did they want to be next to white people. They wanted that to stop.
That's right.
That was the concept. If I can't get a consequence from the legal system, this will never stop. This will never stop. So I get that you keep highlighting what they done to us. I am trying to highlight the reality of how those communities came together. And it's collective, but it's unrealistic to see. But it's unrealistic to think and expect a collective to exist over a trait such as skin color. So even when you go to Africa and give me the examples,
saying,
I'm pretty sure those will be successful
tribes. What you're saying is that it is impossible for us to come together. It is impossible. Just do
That's
the best that you
I'm
can
saying.
As an
I'm
individual for you and your family, because there's no way that we can come together as an African people to pull our resources, to close ranks, pull our resources, and do for ourselves.
I asked for an example of where people did it, not where all these various tribes with different values and different cultures actually came together. There isn't a human example in existence of any group. You don't have to look at just Africa. Like, there are various groups within the people we highlight, within Chinese, that have battles and fight right now. There's never a point in which all Chinese have come together. There's never a point in which all
it is. Under Mao Zedong and communism. Because if you didn't, your ass was dead. But they came together and
so
they understood that
the fact
this
that people were dead
do.
Shows
because,
that's
on,
not the
minute.
Entire group
listen,
coming together. They were killing their
context?
Other people that looked
context.
Like them.
I'm giving you context, brother. There was an example because the deal was this. The Europeans, the British particularly, were running over them, running rush out over them. They came together, kicked the British out, kicked out all the traitors, killed the attorneys and so forth, closed ranks. Of course, now it's really not as communism because what happens in China now, there's millionaires and billionaires. Once again, the money rules, and there are deep areas, listen to me, deep areas of abject poverty in China. And particularly the melanated Chinese, because there are melanated Chinese, you know. So I'm saying that's the context. It happens, brother. It does.
Right. And the context is all groups do exactly that. So I don't know where there's ever been a group that doesn't have that result. And I don't think there's a historical, realistic context where, because again, if you're saying come together to kick out the Europeans, that's a war and a fight. But show me where they've taken care of their own people. There is no group that does that outside of taking care of your own tribe within your group of the people that have the same values, that are on the same level as you. It's like once we realize that, then you go work with the Nigerians, you go work with the Ghanaians specifically based on your similar values. It's how all groups come together. And so then – when you say, you hear me saying we can't come together, we're saying the extremes of one another. You're saying, I'm saying we can't come together, and you're saying the only way to fix it is to come together in a way that I think that no group has ever done. White people never did it. Black people never did it. Humans are tribal by nature.
Okay, check,
like
this
once you
check this out. Check this out. Once again, Steve,
you can be smarter about
you know, once
how you
again,
come
dear
together.
Brother, you got to understand. The context of history. When Europeans, within that dark age, that medieval age, when the Moors were teaching them this, that, and the other for 700 years, they a light came on and said, hey, we made war amongst ourselves.
Can we have a
and
dialogue about today and the values we want to carry on and how to? Okay, go ahead.
We're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And they began to go around the world, Spain, Portugal, England, Germany, Italians, French, and taking people's shit. They did.
But they didn't come together to do it, though. That's real. That's not true. That's not true.
That is
they
true.
They literally went around the world and fought each other for this land. That's you should have said.
That
like they literally
true.
Was killing each other over the land
they
that they wanted. But that's not them coming. That's not white people coming together.
Listen. White folks came together on that. There were treaties. There was the Pope. Lines of demarcation and so forth, because they know they're warlike. But they came in, I'll give you this, you take that. Okay? Just like in the continent, when they came together at the Berlin Conference of 1884-85.
Is the Revolutionary War an example of them coming together or not coming together?
And they carved up Africa. They carved it up. They didn't fight about it. They just carved up. They were in agreement. Because they were collectively together on colonizing Africa, getting resources. There are examples, brother, and there is context.
And I'm saying, is the context also not, it's a mistake to take a construct that was used intentionally in this country to divide black and poor whites. It's a construct, not a real thing, a construct, like you said, there are no black people. It's a color. It's a construct. That part I agree with you. And so the context is, not to now whitewash them coming together when they literally was killing each other over conquering land. Now, I understand that you're speaking to the conquering nature and that they were all colonizing at the same time. I'm not devoid of that at all. However, I'm highlighting it's a mistake to say they came together and now a way to solve our issue is to come together in a way no culture has proven to do. And I think we have to be very aware pushing for something when we can realistically make relationships in advance And there's plenty of examples of us doing it. Like even how we look at the Chinese going into, you know, to those African countries the way they're going into it. We could easily do the same thing and do it exactly like they're doing it if we conceptualize the how is done. And to romanticize the how leads to no solution, in my opinion.
Well, the bottom line is we have to be practical. We have to be serious. We have to understand that
that's what I'm trying to bring to the table, I hope.
The first thing is that we need the proper education. Our minds are messed up.
Absolutely.
We are at war for the minds of our people. The reason why me and you are
absolutely
constantly in conflict here, because you have an ideology, I do too, but mine is not mine. Mine is based on our scholars, our historians. I don't, because listen, brother, if you want my opinion is deeply profane. I'm not going to give you my opinion. What I'm trying to do is give you the perspective of great African scholars, great researchers, great men and women who understood this madness, Francis Crest Wellesley, Dr. Amos Wilson. All of these men and women said, this is madness. We need to get together and get the hell up out of here. We can never do and never be who we are as a people as long as we're in this madness. But you continue to talk about individuals. I ain't talking about individuals. I'm talking about us collectively, brother. I'm talking about us understanding.
I think it's unfair
that
to say I'm talking about individuals. I think it's unfair. I completely care about the collective, and I consistently talk about coming together. I am challenging on the context.
Okay, I apologize then. I apologize, but I perceive that, then I apologize.
Right. And again, that's why we're having a dialogue. You feel me? We're having a dialogue, hopefully, to catch each other's context. I 100% care about the collective. I'm overly concerned with, because I love John Henry Clark. And he says, you know, when you understand history, and so when I dig into history and start realizing how groups actually are successful, then I think we could absolutely focus on having family. And we know how the family, for example, has been attacked. So I don't want to just rely on, well, we could never have this, when there are steps we can take and we can ensure that parents are supplementing their children's education if they're not forced enough to go to a successful African-centered school. Everything, and I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just talking about I'm focused on the practicality of how to move in the current environment, and I hear a romanticized coming together in the sense of is if we can't come together in this manner, we can't. That's how that sounds to me, and I know that we can. I had a brother on my show, to give him credit, Derek Standiford. He has the thing. He says, I am an African, not an African. And so
say,
I am
I say African.
Yes. So I am focused on the collective. I'm just challenging some of the context that we miss here. Like I had a brother, I'm going to get to the next caller here too. I had, Jared Ball, brother Jared Ball. Like, dollar circulating is a complete myth. There's no math, no fact to it. And so I always say, if you make the wrong assessment, you can't make the right improvement. And so I used to say that circulating thing until I did the research, saw exactly what Jared Ball saw, and brought him on the show to talk about it. So it's like you, if you have the wrong context and think money actually can circulate that way, and that's not how money works, and you're trying to come up with a solution with a way that money doesn't work, that solution is got a bad premise from the start. So that's the challenge you hear from me, is what's practical, what makes sense, and if I realize I know more about you based on where you live at in the world and the color of your skin, then it makes me have to say, oh, how is culture developed? Oh, it's developed within a group, within a family. That's how every culture develops it. You and I both know that that's being attacked. We're just differing on the practical solution to do so.
Okay.
Area code 214, last three, 987. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. We kind of just running it. I ain't able to run my show the way I was supposed to. We just really just chopping it up. Go ahead.
What's up with it? It's your girl Jandai chiming in from Dallas, Texas. Can you hear me?
Hey, what's up, Queen? Queen of the Lake member. Yeah, we can hear you coming through clean. What you clear? Come with what you got for us.
I agree with Baba. I agree with the sister who's saying, I think, like, we have to know the historical context in order to move forward. And moving forward, we can't talk. I think I agree that it's going to take collective work and responsibility within our own communities. I do come from one of those towns. It wasn't just like the Tulsas and stuff that you were mentioning. I come from Joppa. Everybody over there, they just simply got together because they did not have, and they put their skill sets together to create those communities to a point to where it had to be built in one way in and one way out to protect themselves. So I just wanted to throw that insert in there that it wasn't just about the one percenters, okay? Wherever you were, whoever you were around, that's who you created the collective work and responsibility of within our communities. I think you're taking out of context, because you like to use that word, context, when you're saying going out to come back in, like what you were saying, how like in Africa and they're collaborating with the Chinese in order to, like, for these agreements and stuff. They're right now in the Congo having to revisit, because history has shown us that every time we move outside and bringing other people in, they turn on you. Okay, historically, and then wait a minute, no, because you've been cutting people off all day.
Yeah, I'm cutting you off because I got to listen to the clarity. The clarity is what I said was you and I, if we decide to, you and me, let's say, if you and I, we could actually go do what they're doing is what I said. You and I, as African Americans, we can go if we decide. Again, they would only agree to if we're bringing whatever resource that place, you know, whichever country we decided to do it in, they would only agree to it if we were bringing what they needed. So I didn't highlight that they're doing it as a good thing. I actually said when we sit there and downplay it, I'm highlighting we actually could have the mindset and go do it ourselves. Part of us being able to do it, to Baba Oshie's point, is the way we learn doesn't make us want to do it. So we sit back and watch other groups do it. And almost as a collective American perspective, downplay it and like kind of where you're going, it doesn't work. I didn't say that it worked. I'm just highlighting with the right mindset, we could actually go learn what they're trying to do with that other group. We could be that player if we wanted to be, if we had the mindset to be. We as African Americans could be doing that, is what I said. Go ahead.
But we don't even need the other players, because everything we have all of these things.
I've never thought about needing
anyone else. We have enough of all of these things. Every time somebody says collective work, you're saying nobody has ever done this thing. No culture has ever done this thing. Okay, let's just deal within our own community. Let's deal with when our
Baba Oshie said it. I said no culture has the southern part of Chinese didn't come together with the northern part of Chinese, is what I said. Tribes come together and are very successful and do great things. We have amazing empires on the continent of Africa. So you shouldn't be hearing me say no group has come together collectively.
You said no. That's what you said. But okay, we don't have to go back and talk about that part.
Sure, okay, man. Okay, so that's fair. Here it is. I will accept that part. So the clarity is that I'm not saying no culture comes together. So let me get the clarity. I will admit I said it, so I'm trying to give the clarity of how groups come together. It's tribes. It's in a tribal way. You and I have the same values, like the collective community you just pointed out with the one way in. That's how groups do it. But that group ain't trying to save me over here in Atlanta because I look like them. That's the distinction I'm making.
But we are.
If that even makes
we
sense.
Are. When you go into when you look into history and those communities were coming together, you couldn't live over here if you were white. Even when you look in America and when Malcolm X was doing this thing, it was like, no, you can work out here, but you couldn't hold a position in here. You understand? So these things are done,
no,
and
no,
they have
I
been proven effective,
no,
even in the saving grace with our people.
So I didn't say about whether I'm talking about us. I ain't saying nothing about no other people. I don't know why we keep.
We can come together with the same.
Because I haven't said nothing about whether white people could come into that town. I said they're not trying to. They're not. They can't worry about.
You said
about
that
what
nobody's moving based on how the color, their ethnicities, right? Nobody's moving based on you look like me, right?
No, I'm okay. Maybe I'm not being clear. I'm just talking about the reality of what we're talking about when people have a success story that we can write about in history. If you go look at how it was done locally and collectively. And even when you go look at how it was done locally and collectively, they still were weeding out those who had the same values, even if they had the same skin color. Not just black. This is any group.
Yes.
That this way. They have said, all right, you have the same value system as me. We will build with you. That's how building is done by all ethnic groups, all religious groups, all cultures.
Yes. Okay. Now with that clarity, pressing forward in the now, we need to, the way that we're asking about solutions in today is going to come back to collective work and responsibility. Whether you stay in this system or you move outside of America, okay, anywhere you go is going to come back to us collectively coming together to make this thing happen. One of the things that you're hearing from him is like the concept of like the Kobe Cambon in the world. When you look globally anywhere, collective worker responsibility is how we are succeeding.
Okay,
and it's what
fair.
We need to get back
Janika,
to
in order to be
successful.
Am I not talking about coming together collectively, in your opinion, Queen? Am I? Because
I just went
like,
back to the
like
root. I said, you
asked
about what is
I'm
it going to take? I'm answering what it's going to take. So I'm saying, yes,
okay.
I'm agreeing with collective work and responsibility with our people. I'm not saying whether you're not saying that or not. I'm saying that's going to be the solution.
Okay.
Go ahead,
so thank you so much. For calling in. I appreciate you. One of the things that I'm hearing as I sit back and listen is the nuance that you spoke about earlier, Montoya. When we talk about collective work and responsibility, what I'm hearing each of you say or not necessarily address is on what scale. So when we're talking about collective work and responsibility, are we talking about on the family level, on the city, country? I know, Baba Osha, you mentioned you're a pan-Africanist. So you all are essentially saying the same thing, but it just sounds like it's on different scales in which we're able
I'm saying
to
starting within family things. And your community, and then from there evolve within the city, making that thing bigger. So start within your own, within our own collective families and communities, right? Because we're all for those that are in proximity, right? But with the same concept of working together, right?
Yes.
So it's like my family and community can come together with their family and community, et cetera. And that's how that thing grows. Healthy families,
yes.
Strong communities.
Absolutely. Now, what are the values that you want to have? Because that's do we still have black cultural values that serve us? I would be shocked. Jendaya, knowing your history, that your group is not moving with values that y'all are passing down. In other words, y'all are doing it. But the broader context, when we start getting into pop media and even the comments we were able to play earlier, we will walk around collectively saying, we don't do this. Like, we'll say that about one another. I'll bring them to where you live, and they will be shocked to know that we do this. And I'm like, more people are doing this than not. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the propaganda. But of the propaganda, what do we need to fight against? Because I would offer that the propaganda moves us away collectively, the group, from values that matter to our community. And I don't think we would disagree with that. I'm just not certain that we're always smart about how to combat it on a family level, and then leading into a collective level. I hope I'm making
sense. And maybe a better time would be strategic about it. You know, like you said, we're doing it, and pockets of people, groups of people are doing it, but it seems as though the strategy is missing to bring
all
together in order to elevate it to a broader platform.
No, I agree.
Agreed.
So, Bob, yes. Oshie, go ahead. Go ahead, Baba Osha, because I love what Sisnika is saying now. And so I think we have to push through these dialogues so we could get smarter at what that strategy and approach
you know,
is.
Let me say this.
And, go ahead, brother.
You know,
ahead,
I know I know even in the educational here in this country, there's very few true independent African-centered schools here in this country. There are some that claim to be, but, of course, they're looking for money tied to the state government or whatever government, you know, to further enhance the school's ability to do whatever. The bottom line is education and the right kind of education. Malcolm said education is our passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare when? Today. And the education that we have been receiving has been designed for us to do and behave just like we are. And, to me, I could give less than a rat's ass if some of us achieve great things educationally. That saying like, oh, we're on a par with Caucasians. He's got these degrees. He's 14 years old. Already he's great. Man, I could give less than a rat's ass. That's not going to change the dynamic for us as a people. What I would like to see is educated young men and young women who have a solid foundation of African-centeredness. And even though they may go to a European college, because even some of the so-called HCBUs, they ain't African. They ain't African-centered either. So they go to the HCBU and they do well, and hopefully they influence other young men and young women. And so then coming together saying, hey, you have these skills, I have these skills, these will be great to go to the continent with to teach and further influence. Because ultimately, for us as African people and as a Pan-Africanist, that's where we need to be. That's where we need to be. They have all the resources. That, once again, I don't want to be redundant. But
hold
on.
Oh,
huh? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It is there. It is there. All these people are in Africa because they know that Africa's resources and what they are. I mean, it was painful for me.
But you have Africans that are as colonized as those in America.
It was painful for me to watch the national news talking about some Russian mercenaries who were in Central Africa, who were brought in by the government because of a conflict. And the pay for these mercenaries is gold and diamonds. Based upon what the article said, or the feature said, they've already extracted over $500 million in gold and diamonds. It's a damn shame that we don't control all the wealth that we're not a poor people, but we're projected as poor. Here, Montoya, go look up this cracker named Howard Nichols. Go online, go look up Howard Nichols, and listen to this man as he talked about why we must keep Africa poor, why we must make sure that Africa never develops anything, never produces anything, why we must keep it for us. This is a serious battle. This is a serious battle for us, man. And so to me, we need to come together and understand what is our objective. Our objective is to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. That is our objective.
Yeah.
It's Pan-Africanism,
yeah,
or we perish.
Wow.
If we don't unify, we will die.
All right, brother. I definitely respect your passion. Go ahead. Whoever's speaking, go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, this
Thank
is Zendaya.
Yep. All right,
yeah.
Go ahead, Queen.
So, well, I mean, I have a response to that, but I won't because that's just a whole other segment. But I will speak on is what we can do for those of us that are here in this country. I'm not opposed to the notion of us in Africa, but I also know that they too have been colonized, and they too, that's just a whole nother conversation. But for us here in America, for those of us who can't afford to jump way over there right fast or right no time soon, right, there are things we can do right here in America, and that is the coming together, even when it comes to the African-centered schools or even the public schools, because, yes, public school is throat, but parents don't realize like the power of their voices within these systems, right?
Yes.
I have worked on both sides. I have worked on the African Center School. My sons have did that, and then over here on the public side, I have watched the black children stand up for their schools and get brand new schools because they collectively came together to stand within that system against it, to move walls in and out. You understand? I've seen it on the African Center side. My son's attending the African Center schools and those same schools having to close their doors because we're not getting the support. So we can go against it and be like, oh, you don't want the government funding. You don't want that money. But at the same token, until we have to collectively be that money. And if you're not going to be that money, you may need to take it. And then you dress up what you need to do to make it happen for us collectively. When it comes to our businesses, we need to stand in the paint for each other. Because we can say all day long, nobody's, you know, in other cultures is driving 10 miles, but they are because they're creating the businesses within the 10 miles. You understand? I have drove the 10 miles to go get gas from a black-owned gas station because I know the importance of keeping that door open. You know, we have collectors that are doing that used to do the once-a-month thing where we would at least target all black businesses.
Let me throw this in there. I love what you're saying, and you say, hey, you're talking about the different approaches. And that's what I push back on, not conceptualizing different approaches. And so, like, for example, even when you talk about, well, they built the businesses along the, you know, the 10 miles along the way so they don't have to drive the 10 miles. Like, you're absolutely right about that. However,
with collective work and responsibility within their communities.
Yeah, but we'll get caught up in the concept of, the example you're giving of not using, in a sense, relying on the government money, and so we should do it this way, but the people we're competing against did that exact same thing. And so that's what I'm always pushing about, like, we're not being smart about how to move in the world, in the industry, especially in the land where you're at, because when you go connect with another place, you have to learn how they move, what their rules are. And so we'll get so collective in blackness and black thought and want to compete. For example, I'll just use this easy example that everybody talks about in our community, but we'll go, look at the Chinese restaurants in our neighborhood and how they're looking out for each other. I've had one of my most listened to shows. It was What Can We Learn from Chinese Americans or whatever. It's one of my most listened to shows of all time. The guy I had on now owns like 5 restaurants, but he literally started illegally in this country, barely making ends meet. Whoever he was working for in the restaurant was paying him, way below minimum wage or whatever. But again, he wanted to be here and eventually got legal or whatever. But I'm highlighting the specifics of this. We'll prop up with that, in a sense, Chinese restaurant being in the community and what it's doing. But Jediah, if you had a restaurant beside that Chinese restaurant, you got to pay full wages. You understand what I'm saying? Like, we're completely saying, look at what they do, and you're not playing on the same scale. Or we'll say, we don't want to rely on the money. And government contracting is how all major business that we brand and spend $1 million on advertising is exactly
I wasn't saying don't do that. I was saying that there's more than one way to do it, but it has to be through with collective work and responsibility within our people. Yeah.
No, I was saying I was highlighting the fact that you were speaking to doing all of it. That I was piggybacking. Loving what you're saying.
Agreed.
I was just highlighting that the businesses that, like you said, they don't have to drive 10 miles because they build it along the way. We'll say, look at what they do. But they're using the very moment that we're telling our people, just use our own money. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, we're not always smart.
And we're not putting our own money collectively together like that.
but that's not what nobody's doing. Like, we think they're, like, they're basically, if I'm putting up this restaurant and there's government money to go get, they're going to get it. And we're saying, hey, let's just put our money together. That ain't what they did. They didn't just put their money together.
But they collectively strategized to get
scale. Right, and the strategy is to use everything that's available, to include U.S. government money, too.
That's the strategy.
The PPP loans, what they do with that PPP loan money.
The grant money.
Right.
You know.
Like we've romanticized.
And then we get the money and then we're able to move on.
And that's not a true thing. But no group has circulated the dollar the way we say they have. Like, that's not how money works.
Okay.
I disagree with that. That there's a history
that's
on
fair.
That. I disagree with that. There was a way that certain groups made sure that whatever monies they had stayed within that community and circulated a number of times before it went out to someplace else. They made sure.
I've seen it too. I've seen it happen on both sides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
because I don't think that one is wrong and one is right. I think that they're both relevant.
Yeah, I agree with you, Zendaya. We've seen both processes work, but it doesn't have to be an either or. It can be a both and conversation. We can circulate our money in our community, and we can go out and get this government money as well and circulate it in our community. And I think we are having these conversations as I sit back quietly and listen to everybody. It's not an either-and discussion in some instances.
We
need to get together and strategize how do we move forward, okay? Understanding where we came from and all the goodness that have to bring, how do we move forward now? I think we spent a whole lot of conversation have butting heads about what happened in the past. How do we move forward now with all the information that we have so that we can broaden this, you know, our reach globally? How do we do that now?
Come on,
with the last 4
on.
Minutes, Montoya. Montoya, you got 4 minutes. Bring it all together.
Now, here it is. The past, if you don't pass the ball to me, then I'm gonna lay it out like this. I think it is to become aware of there are values that are successful anywhere in the world. And when we talk about the importance of culture, the example I would give of is we all talk about how Chick-fil-A, if you will, it does customer service. It's extremely noticeable, very different on how they select who they hire, if you will. And so that's an easy example of culture and the effect of culture. And the reality is when you absolutely understand the importance of culture to succeed, then it becomes paramount that we have smart dialogue about what values lead to the culture we want. How do we protect our children's minds from what they see every day on TikTok and Facebook? We ultimately say, hey, we're taught to consume. That is an American thing that teaches the entire citizenry, all groups, all races. In a capitalist society, you're going to push to sell things and consume things. It's being pushed. The only thing that can protect you from that is cultural values and family structure. And I would even struggle with what family structure should look like. And part of the reason we struggle, to y'all point, is we say, here's what was done to us. I think we failed to strategize the best methodology to negate and still succeed collectively. I think, kind of to Shanika's point, a lot of time is spent on that, whereas this again, I didn't get to play the cuts that I wanted to play. Show would have went in a smarter direction. I will admit that we just free floated today or whatever, but the cuts would have took us to specific areas to discuss. For example, we always talk about the negative influence of hip hop. Quite often, there are realities to the negative influence of hip-hop, but at the same time, quite often as a culture in that dialogue, we lay too much responsibility on hip-hop, which excuses us from the things that we could do, even though we're not happy about commercially the hip-hop that's being pushed. And we'll leave out, for example, that the music makes the kids go kill. When the reality is, if we haven't provided enough economic opportunity in the space that we live, some kids, not too many, but some will resort to crime and violence based on the ability to feed themselves. If we haven't shored up our area, that's a way bigger issue than laying it at the foot of hip-hop, blaming it on the music and excuses of us of our responsibility. So when you say, what can we